It's the official podcast theme song.
There we go.
No, I had a really hoped that he wouldn't do that this one time.
Why?
Because
dude, it's awful.
It's a tradition now.
It's awful.
It is a tradition now.
We're in the presence of a radio legend.
Jerry's so confused.
This is the seventh podcast. If we stop it now, then the tradition dies.
Ooh, lucky number seven podcast.
Oh, that's true. I didn't even think about that.
Jerry House is with us. Well, I'll get him a better introduction here in a second. But Jerry, we can't do, because of music licensing, you can't play music. Because people sue us.
Somebody.
You have to pay someone. So we aren't going to pay someone when we have him in a bullhorn.
Well, as soon as the guy who wrote finds out, you guys are going to get a call from ASCAP.
Figured out that's how we can stop Bubba from doing that.
No, yeah, we just got a letter.
You know somebody wrote that.
Anyway, Jerry House is our guest. Jerry wrote Country Music Broke My Brain. He will be known for this, obviously, but more known because he is a radio legend and just a fine person. And
I like the way you laugh at that. Are you in the Country Music Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Then you're a radio legend.
Dude, he's not just in the Country Music.
Are you in the radio
broadcast? I'm in the Radio Hall of Fame, yeah.
Yeah, the Radio Hall of Fame. He's in there with Stern, Limbaugh.
Dick Clark. Who else
Paul
is in
Harvey.
There?
Paul Harvey. Flip.
Bob Hope. Ronald Reagan.
Reagan's in the Radio Hall of Fame.
How many people are in the Radio Hall of Fame?
I don't know.
There's not many.
No, maybe 25 or 30.
Like the Country Music Hall of Fame, not taking anything away from it.
You know, I'm not in. I'm at the radio. I'm not in the Country Music Hall of Fame. I'm in the radio
the
DJ
Hall. DJ Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no. But anyway, I mean the Country Music Radio Hall of Fame.
Right.
A lot of those guys, I don't know, and it's what I do. You're in it. I know a couple other people, but. To be in the Radio Hall of Fame.
It's a big deal.
That's crazy.
You've won all the awards.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Sheared all the lambs.
Wow.
Sheared
all the lambs.
I don't know. It's a podcast. It doesn't have to make sense.
When you got out, your final day, we were there, your final day.
Standing in the hall.
WSIX. You...
They had a line, remember? It looked like it looked like a military procession. I mean, if they would have had swords up in the air crossed.
Yeah, it kind of did have that marine sort of,
out.
You
know.
I thought there was a wedding. I thought there were people just waiting to throw rice or something. And you walk out. I've always wanted to ask you this. You walk out your final show in radio all these years. You've done it all the awards and accolades and ratings and blah. And you went into the parking lot. Bob and I kind of went out there and just said, hey, congrats, wish you the best. And then you got in your car and you drove away. As soon as you got out of the parking garage, turned right, leaving the station for the last time, what were you thinking?
You know, I wish I had a better story, but I don't. I walked out the door and that was it. I was done. I was okay. I was ready to quit.
I have to pick up laundry detergent. That's what he was thinking.
That's pretty much it.
Was it just almost like another day for you?
No, I mean, I did it. I was ready to go home.
Yeah, but you know how, like, whenever you were a kid, I think all of us went through this. When you're a kid and you finally leave home for the first time, it's everything you've ever known. You've always had mom and dad there, and you're moving out on your own. Dude, I cried. I was driving halfway across the country to go and take this job, and I'm like, holy crud. This is it. I'm an adult now. And that's kind of the same situation where you leave and you drive off and there's no looking back at that point. You're like, this is the beginning of the rest of my life.
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Okay. You're not as deep as I thought you were.
No, I'm very deep. I mean, I accepted it. I was at peace with it. I was cool. I'd made up my mind. I wasn't going to do that. And I didn't just do the radio show. I mean, I still write songs, and I've written a book, and I write for other people, and I play golf, and I got to spend more time in the morning, which I've never done for 35 years with Allison House. I've never, maybe occasionally on the weekend, but, you know, on a Tuesday morning to get up and have breakfast and watch the Today Show or something or listen to you guys or whatever, I'd never done that. It was a totally new world, and I loved it. Still do.
Sleeping late.
I don't do that.
What time do you get up now?
I still wake up at 3:40. And a lot of times I'll go home, you know. I mean,
it's nobody better.
That's the best.
The book that you wrote, you know, you've got stories of artists and you know, people that you've known over the years. Are there any that you wrote? Did you write any of these? Because we talked to you when you were writing, and you said there's a lot of rewrites and a lot of sending it to the editor. They send it back.
Well, that's just for periods and punctuation. These people are grammar Nazis. I mean, you know, I just wrote it. But I didn't. I only changed three stories, and I took a couple of pieces out.
Why?
Because I thought my agent said, who was a really good friend of mine, and he said this might hurt them, or they might not want that known. But for the most part, I use the same parameters that I use for the radio. I mean, would I say this on the radio about Reba? Would I say this about Blake Shelton on the radio? And if I could do that, then I could put it in a book. I was lucky I kind of had
that. And they also know that because, again, you've known just about all of them forever since they started their careers. So
You started their careers, a lot of them.
Exactly.
No.
But, you know, I think they would understand that anything goes with you around, that the story may come out one day. But it's weird, too, because there's situations where we've found where we've protected artists. They'll say stuff in an interview, and if it's something that happens that might just be on a tape delay, we will take it out.
Sure.
Just to save them. I mean, there's been racist comments. Mm. There have been sexist comments. There have been just dumb things that people say that you go,
a lot of times it's things that sound bad. That, you know, they don't even mean it to sound the way it does. But you just
comes
know
out
that's
that way.
How it's going to come off.
So we protect a lot of
them. That's really nice. And I you're right. I mean, I do know some people who have said some very racist things. And I would never.
And they
put
don't
that
mean
up.
It
no,
like that.
Well, I don't know, but I mean, it would first of all, it would sell a lot of books. I could do that if I wanted to be that guy, but I don't want to move to Peru, you know, when it comes out. I don't want to be that guy. I mean, I got a review of the book, and the first thing the reviewer says is, House says everybody in country music is nice, and apparently he decided to be nice too. There's just no real dirt. So this guy was upset that,
yeah, he was looking
that
for...
I didn't flip on my friends or something. And I thought, well, what is that? I'm not going to do that.
Well, I think the people that do that are people who are looking for attention, which obviously you get enough of. You're happy with that.
Sure.
And they're also looking for a quick dollar. And again, you've made a pretty good living for yourself, so you didn't need to do either. So there's no need to turn on your friends like that.
No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't do that.
What's the weirdest call you ever got on the hotline from an artist during the show?
I got one morning. I got about. It was actually before I went on the air. I got about seven calls, and then I went on the air, and I got about another four or five from Keith Urban. Keith had been up all night. I don't know what he was doing, but he called to tell me he was on voice rest, and he would talk for a minute or so, and then he would hang up, and then he would call back, and he said, "Jerry, I'm still on voice rest." And
what was he doing?
And then he would call back and go, "Jay, I'm still on voice rest. I can hardly talk. I'm not supposed to be talking." He did that about 10 times. And he says, you know, he drunk dialed me. I mean, he was having a good time.
But this was back in the day before this.
Back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day.
Do you know, I told him when, you know, because we're friends. I mean, really friends. And he and Nicole and Allison and I go out to dinner all the time. But in fact, he texted me the other day from Morocco.
Nice.
Is that cool?
And that was probably your suggestion.
No.
Really?
I wrote him something about some things.
Isn't that one of those places you like to go, though?
Yeah,
Morocco?
I love Morocco. Yeah, I love Marrakesh. But he was over there because she's doing a movie, and they're only apart 3 days. They won't be apart more than 3 days. So he flew to Morocco, and he was playing in Calgary, Canada that night. There's a commute for you.
Wow.
Morocco to Calgary. But
I didn't know they had the three-day rule.
Yeah, they do. They're not apart more than 3 days.
That's really good.
Really hard.
It's good for the marriage, though.
Yeah. Hey. Well, if you had a chance to go to Nicole Kidman's bedroom, wouldn't you go home every 3 days? I thought that's really not a big sacrifice, there, Keith.
And if you don't answer this, it's fine. Is Tom Cruise available? Is he part of that at all?
We don't ever discuss it.
It never comes up.
I would never bring it up, and I know they're not bringing it up. No, it's just... doesn't exist.
They've gone their separate ways then.
Just erased.
I guess. I don't know. How could you go up to this woman and say,
I know.
Hey, you used to be married to Tom Cruise. I've seen her talk about it in books and stuff and in magazine interviews, but I'm not going to bring it up.
Yeah.
Because
you're a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. And somebody who's doing an interview for a magazine, they will never see them again. They don't have to be social with them. So the uncomfortableness can come out.
that's why it's, you're right about the whole dirt, you know, you didn't do a whole lot of dirt in the book. And like,
there are some stories in there that are pretty wacky, but.
Wacky is different than dirt, though.
Yeah, I guess so.
And like,
yeah.
We'll have, I forget who it was, when Aldean had his thing with the TMZ girl, he's all over, this other girl's not his wife. And I'm telling you.
He came in here, it was like 2 days
later.
Two days later.
The day after, guys.
Was it one day?
It was the day after.
He comes in and.
Did you bring it up?
We brought it up. We brought it up before we went on the air. We said, Jason, we just want you to know, before we flip these microphones on, we're not going to talk about it. That is a personal thing. We're going to leave it for you and your wife to work out, and it's none of our business, and it's none of our listeners' business. Right. And he said, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I find myself, personally, I want to be that way. But professionally,
people give us a hard time. They're like, I can't believe you. And yeah, after the show that day, they were like, I can't believe you didn't ask him about the girl and his wife and all. And we're like,
and I want to go.
We're still friends.
I want to go.
I have
you
to see
wouldn't?
Him again.
Oh, yeah. You want to tell me you would stand here in front of a guy and ask him that? No, you know what you'd do? You would sit there and not say a word because you're starstruck.
Well, I've actually said to people in management who have said to me, I can't believe. And I said, well, do you want me to go on the air and talk about the girl that you used to go see over at the Hyatt Regency? And you used to talk about her all the time? You want me to talk about that on the air?
Wow.
And that was the end of that discussion.
Wow. You know what you just did?
Or how about the girl, you know, that you were in, you had her sitting on the copy machine.
Yeah, how
and
about
you showed,
that?
Make
you
sure
showed
you
us all
copy
the,
machine.
Yeah, the, yeah, copy machine. You showed us all the Xerox pictures. You want to talk about that? No. Yeah. Okay.
It's like in the Bible. They bring this prostitute. Jesus, what are you going to do? We found her in the act. And he starts writing something in the sand. And then one by one, they all start splitting. That's exactly what you did. You started writing that girl's name in the sand.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I did.
First one to, without a sin, cast the first stone.
Wow.
Or something like that. I didn't say that quite right.
You got the idea. You made that whole thing biblical, which is amazing.
Uh-huh. That's right.
You know there's nobody named Bubba in the Bible. Did you know that?
No, there are no Bubbas in
Bubba.
The Bible.
Mm-mm.
I think it translates differently. I think there are Bubbas.
Beelzebubba is in there.
Yeah, that's the wrong kind, though.
Yeah.
I think it just, you know, every just like every country has their own rednecks, they just call them different things.
Do you,
like the townies make fun of the rural people.
The townies?
I'm just saying, like the city folk, even in London, they have, I don't know what they call them, but they have their redneck people. They're like, oh yeah, they're not, you know,
yeah,
city
people.
Yeah, they're
the EastEnders.
Is that what they call
them?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, so every country has them. We just call them different names.
So are you going to do another book, more books?
Yeah, I have two books I've started. One called 29 Dogs, and the other's called is about rejection. And my wife and I are just barely into a historical fiction novel called 1939, because so many important things happened in 39. Second World War started, and Hitler, and all the books that came out, all the movies that came out in 1939. Gone with the Wind, The Wizard of Oz, Citizen Kane.
So what's this one going to be about? It's going to just be a...
Is
it going to be historical fiction or
historical,
like alternative
historical fiction?
Historical fiction. Okay.
But it'll be a story set in that time, but all these things will be going on around them.
I'm fascinated by it. Have you ever seen the alternate history books?
Yes.
They're pretty crazy.
Like what is
that? They'll take like Pearl Harbor and they'll say, what would have happened if Japan had invaded instead of just, you know, done the air raid?
Wow.
And if Japan had taken over the island, and then they play the war out from that point, or what happened if the Germans would have won, or what? And they
well,
do
that's all
these,
supposition, though. I like what actually
war.
Happened.
Oh, exactly. But it's just interesting to see how different the world would be in these alternate histories. If, you know, the South would have won, how things would have been different, you know, how the nation, how this whole continent would have been different.
Yes, but that is in relation to the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Right. By the way, is the cat dead or alive in the box?
The what?
The cat in the Schrodinger's box.
Schrodinger's cat. That's where we just went from.
If you have a cat in a box, is it alive or dead?
It's alive.
Is it?
How do you know?
You don't know.
That's the whole point of the theory.
In Schrodinger's theory, you don't know.
Now you act like you know.
Well, yeah, you know the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Yeah, like five seconds ago, you're like, so what?
We're all just running around.
Huh? Well, he brought up another principle in the middle of my principle.
Right.
That's right. That's cheating.
We have principle clashes. Yeah. And that's what threw you?
I just threw it in because I was trying to be on principle. But it didn't work.
Can I tell you, I was coming to work one morning late, and I was listening to Jerry's show. And one of the hardest I've ever laughed at radio in my life was you doing, I don't even remember the context of it, but it was you doing an impersonation of Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter.
And just that voice. I almost ran off the road. I was laughing so hard. Jared just...
My manager was a guy, at one time was a guy named Phil Walden, who owned Capricorn Records, and got Jimmy Carter, was responsible for him being president. Because Carter ran out of money, and he called up Phil and said, can you help me? I'm broke. And Phil did concerts with all his acts. He had the Charlie Daniels Band and Wet Willie and all these huge 70s country rock bands. I mean, 8 or 10 of them. And held concerts all over the country and raised money for Jimmy Carter. And, you know, and kept his campaign alive. And so Phil later went to the White House as a special guest, and he told Jimmy, he said, Jimmy said, what can I do for you, Phil? What can I do for you? And Phil said, I want to go on the roof of the White House and smoke a joint.
And did he?
And yes, he did.
Oh, wow.
Are you serious?
Jimmy said, I'll tell the Secret Service to look the other way. And Phil went up and stood on top of the White House and smoked a joint just so he could say he did it.
Wow.
Isn't that a wild story?
That's almost as good as your monkey on the beach story.
Yeah.
Your best stories, if you realize this, your best stories have something to do with pot.
Yes.
Do they? And I'm not a pot smoker at all.
No, but I'm just saying, like, you told us a great
Waylon. It's in the industry a lot.
The Waylon story is in the book.
Well, that's not pot.
But no, but it's a substance. And then these two stories that you've shared with us.
Well, that's not in the book. That story's not in the book. You guys got it.
Oh, right. Yes.
I just happened to remember that.
Oh, I understand. I understand.
Because Phil Walden started out managing Otis Redding. And I met Phil. I went to lunch with Phil. And the guy who was writing the screenplay of the story of Phil and Otis Redding's life. Otis Redding was the greatest soul singer in the South, was 21 years old and black. Phil was a 19-year-old white guy traveling across the South, dealing with segregation, trying to get Otis into radio stations, trying to get Otis into hotels.
Otis is still one of the greatest ever.
Oh, yeah. And died when he was 26.
Which is amazing. I didn't know that until like a year ago. I was researching.
Yeah, you think he was a lot older.
Yeah, I was researching. Why is there not more Otis music? You would think that a guy like 60 years old would have a ton of music out there.
Nope.
So I assumed he was 60 because of the way he sounded. And then I got on Wikipedia and literally it said he died at 26. I'm like, are you kidding me?
I know. Yeah, but Phil did all that and made him a star. And the screenwriter, it was me, my daughter, who was 19 years old in college, the screenwriter, and Phil. And the screenwriter could care nothing about anything. He was hitting on my daughter and was trying his best to get a date with Autumn, and she wanted nothing to do with him. And so finally my daughter left. And the screenwriter left, and I said to Phil, I said, what is with him? He said, well, he's a really good screenwriter. His name was Billy Bob Thornton, who later married Angelina Jolie. So right. he had a line somewhere. I mean, he worked his magic somewhere.
Right.
You know, and I got to know him, and then Phil became my manager out of that. It was funny.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Patrick, you're talking about funny lines you're hearing Jerry say. I remember him talking about Crook and Chase, and he brought up Charlie Chase.
Oh, my God. I remember
and he said Charlie Chase looks like a riverboat.
Dresses like a riverboat gambler.
Well, he does.
Looks like a riverboat captain.
He always looks like he's going to go, hello, son. Come on upstairs. We'll play a little poker.
I saw him at the Brad Paisley concert in Nashville after country radio seminar, and he literally put his hand on my shoulder and said, how you doing, son? And I almost lost it.
Yeah.
Because I already.
He's got a gold chain, you know, and a big striped vest and everything.
He keeps checking his pocket watch to see if they're on time.
Well, it looks to me like it's time to go to the table, son. Let's go on over here. And the riverboat's going to go to the levee.
Can I get you a mint julep?
Now, there have been several times in here in the almost 15 years I've been doing this with these guys that we've had to literally just go to the next song or go to the commercial because we were laughing so hard at something that probably was only funny to us, but we couldn't stop laughing.
Basically like all of our show.
Yeah, only funny to us. Do you have any memories like that with Mike and Alan Duncan where you were just standing around and something got so out of hand funny that you couldn't keep going?
A couple of times I've had that happen.
Anything you
I remember we were talking about Holmes. Al Vex was my news guy, very serious, very straight, drank like a fish. And he, we were talking about home security systems on the air live, and I was saying I have mine on mine because they go off all the time, you know, and you can't find where the things are in the house, and I was talking about that. And I went to Al. I said, Al, do you have trouble with your home security system? And he said, home security? Hell, I don't have any home security. People can come in whenever they want. And then he realized what he said. That his house was an open door. Oh, man. He got that dope look, you know.
Jerry has.
He now has security.
To me, I always enjoyed listening to Jerry because of the style and the meter and the pacing was different than what you heard on any other radio station on the dial, because radio guys were so rushed. You know,
well, you guys have the same pace that I do for the most part. Well,
we've learned a lot.
It's a lot slower than it was when I first heard you.
Yes, it was. It's exactly right. And we listened.
Ah.
We picked up a lot of that from you. We understand now to let the conversation breathe. And a lot of people don't get that, especially young dish. There's hardly any young dish jockeys anymore. But these young guys coming in the industry, they think they gotta scream and yell.
You have fear of silence because you it sounds like it's longer than it really is. But people in real conversations stop and talk and look around and think.
How many times in your car when you have somebody sitting right next to you, do you go minutes without saying anything? It happens.
Well, I was a big student of early comedians like Bob Hope and Jack Benny. And if you watch really great TV personalities, Johnny Carson, David Letterman, they all speak slowly. They all talk very slow. Ralph Emery talked very slow because, but in particular in radio, if people can't see you, they think they can't hear you as well. They can't see what you're saying, you know, can't read your lips and get it. So you have to take your time because people miss it. People miss what you're saying.
Yeah.
And we are kind of
background
music. I don't
know why people talk so fast.
We are kind of background noise in a lot of situations. I mean, in the car, we're kind of company, but like in an office, we're absolutely background noise.
Yeah, I guess so. If you don't give people time to laugh too or think,
yes,
and you're on to the next thing, you're stepping on their thought process.
Mm-hmm. Beck is real good at that. Glenn Beck is real good. Glenn will talk and add so much. There's so much
drama.
There's more speaking when there's no speaking. There's so much power in those pauses.
I equate that to the old horror movies when they would never show you the monster. Uh-huh. They would let you imagine it. So what you're talking about where, you know, leaving those spaces there, the listener fills that in.
Right.
I remember when Beck's show first went syndicated across the country in talk radio, and program directors of radio stations all lost their minds because he would pause. He would be in the middle of a sentence. And just do that. And radio people are so averse to silence.
Well, you know what happened is that there are silence sensors that are built on. So if a station goes off the air and there's silence,
you would start hearing
so many seconds, and then all of a sudden, all these sensors would go off.
I set that off a lot.
And it would it would page, back when pagers were around, it would page the program director. Remember that?
Yeah. All right, we're on the air. Yeah, we're on the air. I'm just telling a story.
I can tell you one of my favorite radio stories. I can tell you that.
Please. Yeah.
I started out, I wasn't on the FM, I was on the AM, WSIX AM. This is back when dinosaurs ruled the earth. It was early, early, way a long time ago in Nashville. And we had a terrible snowstorm, and the roads were just impassable for about 3 days. So I was talking on the air, and suddenly everything just went, just died. And we were off the air. I tried to turn things back on. I didn't know what was going on. And the engineer came in, and he said, we have a problem at the transmitter. And I said, did we lose power? What about the generator? Because you got to have a generator, an emergency generator that kicks in that makes power. And he said, I couldn't get up the hill to the generator, and the station ran out of gas.
That's great.
I know.
It's a gas-powered radio station.
We ran out of gas. We were on empty. And we went off the air.
Don't you know to fill up at a quarter of a tank?
We had the backup. We had the guy on the bike pedaling it. You know, and he passed out from exhaustion.
Before we bought into this building and, you know, built this facility out, we looked at a gas station. We wanted a gas. It was an old gas station that had been abandoned, and we're like, oh, "Wouldn't that be the coolest thing to broadcast from a gas station, a radio station?
Super cool, man!"
But it didn't work.
This is cool, though. I mean, because what we have here, this is what this. I mean, we sat down with an architect, and Rob, his name, and great guy, and he literally laid out exactly our dream and our what we want. Okay, well, we want. We want a studio like this size here that we're in right now, and then we want a really super hip green room that people can sit in.
Watch and listen through the old Sylvania.
Through the old 1937 Zenith.
Zenith.
Old radio. It's all rewired. And then we want a sound stage where we can do video and TV commercials.
It's beautiful.
It's
very vibey and very moody.
I remember when we had lunch with you months ago, and you said, it's something I think you... It had a big impact on me. You said, well, whenever you guys finish, you get your studio done, you know, make sure it's impressive because you want to make a good impression for artists, labels, because that's important. And you're right. Mm-hmm. It is important.
Yes, it is.
And so when you come in here, I hope it's impressive.
Yes, you go, wow.
Yeah.
I did. Yeah, I don't know why they bring artists in where we worked for years. They bring artists in and stick them in a little office.
That's awful.
It was, I mean, and the office would be dirty.
Oh, mm-hmm. With fluorescent lights?
Yeah, it's just horrible. I don't know why they treat people like that. I don't.
Fluorescent lights. How? First world problems.
First world problems. Fluorescent.
Oh, fluorescent lights. He'll tell us everything he knows. Put him in that room with fluorescent lights.
With
the
what lights?
The flicker will start to get to him.
Fluorescent.
It's funny you said first world problems because that's so true. I mean, you know, I mean, do you do that? I mean, I read things or something horrible happens to a friend of mine and I think, I am never going to complain about anything ever again. And then 5 seconds later, somebody doesn't turn on a green light, you know, quick enough and you've forgotten all that.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to go, you want to storm right back into Starbucks and say, I said extra ice.
What is wrong with you?
I watched this documentary 2 nights ago on some people in Papua New Guinea who live in trees. They live in trees, dude.
Like, why?
Because that's the way they live. They live in a flipping tree. They climb a pole to get into their house. And the reason they live in the trees is because they want to get above
the animals. No.
Oh. They want to get above the jungle canopy. They find the tallest tree and they live in it so they can get above the malaria-carrying mosquitoes. And I was thinking to myself, and they sleep on the floor of this bamboo hatch or hut up in the middle of this tree to avoid malaria mosquitoes. And I'm thinking, I complain when my kids misbehave. Mm-hmm. You know, it was,
yeah, but it's hard to carry that feeling.
But their children fall out of the trees. Their children are dying, dropping 40 feet to the jungle floor below because they turn their back. And I'm thinking, you know, we don't have problems here.
The average woman in Africa spends 8 hours a day looking for water. That's what they do. 8 hours of their day, two-thirds of their day, 16 hours a day, you know, looking for water. That's what they do. And most of them have craniofacial problems because they carry the water on their head and it weighs 40 to 80 pounds, bringing it back to their family. That's their job. Their job is to go find water, and they go do that.
So the men find the food and the women bring the water?
Yeah, hunters and gatherers and, you know, and but they, it is.
It's their whole life.
That's their whole life.
Every day.
Every day to go. That's the number one thing is find water for my babies. And, you know, and you're right. And we're complaining about our lattes. But by the way, The lattes here are really good.
I was actually thinking, whenever you said lattes, I went, I'm out of coffee. I'm really going to go fix me a coffee here in a minute.
Hey, get Jerry's book. It's called Country Music Broke My Brain. You'll hear stories about your favorite artists that you like, and that's why they're your favorite, because you like them. And you can get it on Amazon. You can go
Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble. You can go to countrymusicbrokemybrain.com.
Right.
You can just Google Jerry House with a G, and I'm pretty sure it'll pop up. Won't be able to miss it. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you guys.
Thanks for hanging out and doing this with us.
Yeah.
We be podding.
We be podding.
Is this your first ever podcast?
See you, podners. Yes.
Cool.
Wow, really?
I was a pod virgin until I got here today.
Well, nice. we were too until 7 weeks ago.
Yeah. It's weird because it's a completely different.
Yeah, because, you know, you would think that a radio person wouldn't want to do a podcast.
Because we have a radio show. We do.
You can get whatever you need, whatever your message is, out on the air. But it's different because we talk about different things here than we would on the air.
Yeah, a lot more behind the scene kind of stuff.
What would happen if you did this on the air and did your show as a podcast? Would it be more successful?
I don't know. I would like to do a little bit more.
You know, it's interesting that you say that.
Melding the worlds.
Because do you guys find that we kind of are starting to merge more? Or not?
No, you know, we still play a lot of music.
Yeah, but your show is getting podified.
I think it's getting,
the podification of you guys.
It's very.
Yes, it's very. We're potty trained.
Yes. I don't know how long you guys can do this dual pod thing. No, Jerry, go ahead.
Come on, dude.
You can't shake me off.
Us with the pod pun.
Come on, you can't shake me off.
I'm not going to do it.
He ran out of pod puns.
I don't want you to get PO'd.
Oh, nice.
It's still POD.
Bubba, what are you going to do about that?
This whole thing is just going to pod.
Oh.
It's going really, to pod, you know.
Yeah. Well, why don't you take your bullhorn out and
close
do your
it up.
Do that great theme again. Wait
yeah, do that theme because it's so good. It's so good.
Do the
good.
Theme.
Come on.
You can't perform under pressure. I can't.
What do you think about? Think about all the. All the
thank you, Jerry.
It's over.
Yay!
Yeah. Don Schlitz wrote that. It's going to sue you.